Hello, and welcome to How She Really Does It with Corinne. You are tuned to KDRT LP in Davis, California, 101.5 FM. I'm a coach, I'm a wife, a mother, an educator, a friend, and most importantly, a woman. I've always been interested in human interest stories or other people's stories and journeys. And since becoming a mom, I've wondered in bewilderment how she really does it. I'm asking you to join me on my personal quest to learn how women do it. This talk show is meant to inspire, empower, entertain, and be a resource for women. Each week, there will be different topics focusing on what women face in their day-to-day life. This show will provide an opportunity for women to learn from each other and learn how she really does it. Do you wonder how others balance family, work, volunteering, marriage, self, and friends? Financial issues, our children and sports, parenting and school, religion and family, career and family. You can always email me at howshe@gmail.com. This morning we have Bay Butler, UCD lecturer and enrolled agent here. Welcome, Bay.
Hi, Corinne. It's good to be here. Good to see you again.
We're glad to have you here. At this time of the year, with Christmas and the holidays just over, there's a lot of people have debt. And what's some advice do you have for debt reduction?
Well, this time of year, people have generally followed the standard consumer line and overcharged Christmas. So the credit card balances tend to be up. To get out from under those, the typical cycle, by the way, just for your interest, is that the Christmas credit cards from this year will be paid off about September of next year.
Wow.
Just in time for the back-to-school sales for those who are parents. So the credit card balances start rising from there and then reach a peak normally during the Christmas period. So this is a standard cycle, and this is a standard cycle for people who never get out of debt.
Wow.
Okay. In the use of credit, there's the what I call the traditional American who always has a credit card balance and never seems to pay it all off. Those who just use credit cards monthly so that they run up a balance and pay it off, and those who use credit cards just sparingly for emergencies only. But I'm going to address mainly the people who find it hard to stop running balances.
Well, that's the majority of people, correct?
That's by far the majority of people, right. Oddly enough, and I won't mention the word budget because people always make a New Year's resolution to budget, and it doesn't happen. It lasts about a month. But there are some things that you can do as a practice. One is to reduce the amount that you eat out, and particularly that you buy expensive coffee. If you fill a thermos jug with coffee at your home every day, and take it with you, and it can be the best coffee that you can buy. What you save at going to an expensive coffee store in a month can make more than the minimum payment on your credit card.
Uh-huh.
And just think about that as one means where only one or two people in the house, the kids don't have to give up much, but one or two people in the house can just take a thermos with them instead of going to Starbucks. Oops. Sorry, or Pete's, or any of the other stores that have the high end coffees, and just simply substituting a very good coffee made at home in a thermos for that.
And it can still be the brand name coffees.
It can still be the brand name coffee, but if you want to try this for a month, even if you aren't getting out of debt, just try grinding Starbucks at home versus buying it in the store, and you'll find out what I'm talking about.
Well, not only the money, but the time that it would save you, too.
Oh, yes. Yes. But, you know, there's the social side, too. I mean, after all, the $1.95 buns are just so good to eat, right? And that also helps. But reduction in eating out, most families find that if they really have to save money by simply not eating out and giving up the expensive coffee, they have enough money to pay off their credit cards, usually by June. It's that simple.
Wow.
So that's a first easy step. If you find you're really having a hard time, it might be also a good idea to give up credit cards for until June in general. except for gasoline. And I say except for gasoline because the hazard of running cash back and forth to a store at a gas station, just from a safety standpoint, it's safer to use a credit card at the pump than it is to flash cash around in a gas station. So that's just part of the times. But if you just put the credit cards in a file, you're probably going to, and just use cash instead, you will run out of cash by the end of the month. So you can't, you know, it's very hard to get tempted because you just have to wait for the next paycheck. And this is a way of running discipline because then you become really conscious because you have no more green stuff left in your pocket to spend. So it helps.
Well, one of the things being a small business owner is that credit card companies really sell getting businesses to accept credit cards because they say that the studies have shown people will spend more money with credit cards than just with cash or check.
Oh, without doubt. And not only that, if you notice, if in your checkbook you keep track of every check that you write, you write it on your either on the stub or on the check register. Nobody keeps a check register on their credit card. Yet that one thing, and nobody does that. I'm not saying that you should because nobody does.
Uh-huh.
But if somebody did want to control their spending, that would be a quick way of doing it because they could set themselves a budget limit for their credit card and simply when they reach it, stop using the credit card.
Instead of getting that bill at that month.
Instead of getting the shock at the end of the month. I only thought that was $100, but it was $300, you know, so that's those are all good ways of doing it.
How many credit cards should one have?
This is a good question. For now, before we even go there,
okay,
let's talk about FICO scores.
Okay.
Okay, because how many credit cards you should have depends on what kind of a FICO score you want. And FICO stands for Fair Isaacs Company. And they have a way of measuring credit, which is used pretty much by all credit-granting companies in the United States. And just so you get an idea of who else uses it, employers use it, landlords use it. I'm a landlord. I use FICO scores. Insurers use it. Utilities use it. Your internet service providers use it. And cable companies use it.
Really?
As a measure of whether or not they are going to grant you service or credit. So this is and employers use it as a hiring filter also now because they want people with good FICO scores because they generally, the assumption is that if they're not under financial pressure, they will not steal
uh-huh.
or they not commit, try to embezzle or something like that. So employers are looking for a good FICO score, particularly in retail and in places where money theft is possible.
Okay.
But let's talk about a FICO score. If you want to find out what your FICO score is, you can go to just a wonderful website, which is www.annualcreditreport.com. That annualcreditreport.com is all one word. And you are entitled to a free credit report every year from the credit measuring agencies. Now, there are three credit reporting agencies that you'd get that from. The first is Equifax. The second is TransUnion. The third is Experian. And then if you want to see your FICO score as measured by MyFICO or Fair Isaacs Company itself, you can go to myfico.com and you can bring up your own FICO score. Your name is there.
Now, with the Fair Isaacs, do you have to pay for your FICO score there?
I believe now they I can check this very quickly, but I believe now that they give you one for free, just the way the other companies do. They have a free trial.
Oh, okay.
I'm just called up the website, yeah.
I go to the annualcreditreport.com, and I get, I think I go every 4 months, So that way I can get a report from each of the different companies.
That's
that way it's
correct.
Throughout the year.
Yeah.
And or you can get it all at once, but then...
Oh, no, no. Do them one at a time. Now, the other thing that you're going to find is that every credit reporting agency has a different score, different FICO score for you based on the information that they have and based on the way they weight the information. And all three of those scores are different from the Fair Isaac score because the three credit reporting agencies don't want to pay FICO for using their system. So they've developed their own system. Okay. Now, the scores can vary widely. And if you find on your reports that your FICO score is varying widely, that is a flag to you to go check the credit report, particularly from the credit reporting agency that's giving you a low FICO score. Now, let's talk about low and what low means. Okay. The lowest FICO score you can have is 300. The highest FICO score you can have is 850. The average person will have a FICO score around 720. This is the average. Now, what does this mean? Well, what this means is if you're above average, you can save yourself hundreds to thousands of dollars a year in credit costs because your interest rates will be lower. Your terms, your credit card terms, for instance, no annual fee is quite common if you have above 720. They're willing to give a lot. Now, also understand this. If your credit FICO score is less than 600, statistically, there's a 51% chance that you will default on a debt with a lender.
Oh, really?
Yes. So if you have a FICO score less than 600 or even toward the low 600, I mean, you know, 600, 610, the credit granters are going to be looking at you as a high-risk situation. So it pays to clean it up. Now, what do you do to clean it up? Okay. Adverse information can stay on your credit report for 7 years, and sometimes you find things. For instance, I have a loan on my credit report that's 15 years old, and the bank that submitted the information no longer exists, so they won't take it off because the person who reported it won't.
It's
consent to take it off because they don't exist anymore. So you run into little things like this. But the past 24 months is really the most critical as far as most credit granters are concerned. So if you've had bad credit, you can do things to clean it up. Let's look at the FICO weighting to see what they consider important. Probably the heaviest weight, 35%, is given to payment history. In other words, how timely are you? Have you been late? Late payments are not good, as bounce checks are not good, things like that. They want to see that your payment history is on time and as agreed. The amounts owed are about 30%. High balances, particularly limited out credit cards, are really edgy. Those are things you want to worry about. Now, if going to this for a minute on the amounts owed, if you owe a lot of money on your credit cards and you really are going to knuckle down and just give up a lot of things to get yourself out of debt, and it does take sacrifice, sometimes for 2 or 3 years, of really not having any fun at all. I mean, you know, it's strictly top ramen and good food for the kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're just kind of stuck with that. But that's what it takes to get out. Now, if you're going to do that, understand that it's probably best to pay off the credit cards that you have that have small balances first, because that reduces the number of minimum payments that you have to make per month. Okay? If you understand what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Say you had 8 credit cards and you had 3 of them with small balances. If you have if you can pay off those three small balances, you now only have five minimum payments a month. And you take the money that was going toward those three minimum payments and put it toward really starting to reduce the debt on the five. And always work with the smallest first.
So you don't worry about which has the highest interest rate?
No, because there's one thing that you'll find as you're reducing your debt, and that is you will get all kinds of nice mail that says 1.99%.
Okay.
Read it carefully. If it also says, oh, yes, and we charge this small 2% fee for the balance transfer, that's a no. But some of these that come in have no transfer fee. Now, the secret is 1.99% lasts for how long? Okay. And then does it convert to an interest rate twice as high as you're paying now? Okay.
That's
because
usually.
If you're paying 14% now, but the 1.99% goes to 20.38, this may be not be an arrangement that you want to get into unless you can pay off the balance in full. Never count on being able to roll a low interest teaser rate credit card into another low interest rate teaser credit card. I think they time these scientifically so that you get trapped in the worst possible one. Okay. And it is expensive when they hit.
Well, and when you miss a payment or you're late, then
that's
it goes right through the
There's
roof.
There's your FICO score. And that hurts. Because as soon as you start a late payment, it's in the last 24 months. They're looking, oh, are they having problems? All that kind of thing. Particularly if it was a minimum payment. So anyway, and just to take this one step further, if you're really, really in trouble, I strongly recommend Consumer Counseling Credit Service of Sacramento. And this is consumer credit counseling service only. This is not the ones you see on television. This is not anybody else. There is just one consumer credit counseling service that is supported by the credit card companies and the banks. And they're a low-cost or free service. They are the best in the business, low cost or free, yes. And they have a website, and I'll just give it to you slowly. It's cccsacto.org with a www in front, of course. But that's cccsacto.org. And I strongly recommend them. They also have a number, 1-800-736-2227. Very friendly people, wonderful to work with. And if you're thinking about bankruptcy, probably you're not going to be able to. It's very expensive now. Fewer attorneys are doing it.
That's right. They changed the tax law or the law a year ago.
They changed, yes, a very comprehensive bill and one that made it extremely difficult to bankrupt out of debt. If you want further information on that, I'd recommend www.nolo.com. And by the way, Corinne tells me that she will post these
on the website.
On the website.
So on the Cadert website.
That's www.nolo.com. And this is for all kinds of legal advice. When you get there, click on property and money and then bankruptcy. And they have a very, very superb informational site on what you can and can't do, what it's going to cost and stuff like that. And that just takes us to the second part, which was the amounts owed.
Okay.
A long discussion on the FICO score. Then your length of credit history is 15% of the weight. And the length of credit history just depends on how much gray hair you have. And the more good time you have, the higher your FICO score is going to be. So age does make a difference. Okay, if you're young and don't have a lot of credit history, your FICO score is just by its very nature going to be lower. But the more you work to build it up, the better you're going to be.
So in college, on college campuses, you see all sorts of credit card companies.
I would take every one you could get.
And just not,
or use them very slightly. And the reason I say that is that the day you graduate, you have to have 2 years on the job to get the same credit card they gave you a T-shirt to get when you're on campus.
Oh.
Yes. So because you're now no longer have potential, you have to prove to them that you're really. See, in college, and particularly at the University of California, they know that you have potential. So they're going to give you the world to get you on their credit card. But as soon as you leave, you no longer have potential. You have to prove to the credit granters that you're full-time employed and all that kind of stuff.
There is a big difference because when I was a student at UC Davis, I think at one point I had 10, just because I was, had it ground into me that I needed to get a credit established and always to pay it off. But when I work at Sac City College, it's a lot. There's not as much credit out there.
That's
for
right.
Those students.
And that's because probably if you sample the overall FICO scores, you'll find the FICO scores of students at Davis, many of them are very well established already. And so it's a good, productive field. And at Sac City College, probably you're going to see lower FICO scores. It's just a matter of that's just income brackets.
Wow.
Fourth thing is new credit on a FICO score. Now, new credit is a hazardous thing. You go to a store, they say, oh, get your 15% discount today. You go to Amazon.com, say $30. And I did this because I buy a lot from Amazon.com, and I finally got their card because I got so frustrated. But it's, they say $30 off or get your 10% or 15% or 20% discount for taking our credit card. Now, if you're that lowers your FICO score. All the new credit that you take on, the more new credit that you take on, each one of those that you take on slightly lowers your FICO score because they don't know why you're taking out new credit. And so it causes a question in the minds of the lenders. Then your FICO score will gradually come back up again as payment history on those cards gets developed and it's clear you aren't expanding your kind of, everything. And then the types of credit use that you have. You just want to make sure that you're using your credit responsibly. They do look at high balances for frivolous stuff that you may not consider frivolous, but they do.
What would be frivolous?
Well, let's put it this way. If you charge a dream getaway tour to Bali twice a year and your total annual family income is $70,000, they're going to look at that and say, unless you have some way of paying that off right away, but if you run balances on stuff like that, they're going to look at that and say, the people aren't focusing realistically on what they're doing.
Okay.
So you just want to realize that there is the types of credit use is something that you want to pay attention to.
And when you keep carrying the balance over. So if you can pay it off.
If you can pay it off and restart, that's very valuable too.
But if you can't pay it off and you have these
huge. And what they look for is huge spikes. In other words, you're running a low balance of $200 and suddenly there's $10,000 on the credit card and it doesn't get paid off for a long time. And then before that's paid off, there's another $10,000 charged on. That's when they begin to get a little worried.
Okay. We're here talking with Bay Butler. He's a UCD lecturer and enrolled agent. We're talking about personal finance and this is How She Really Does It on 101.5 FM. And right now we're talking about credit and credit cards and FICO scores. So we have.
You asked a question, which I didn't answer completely.
Okay.
And we all started this because you said how many credit cards?
Oh, that's right.
You want the ideal FICO score. 3 to 4 credit cards with large credit limits. I mean, 10,000 or over is ideal, but 8,000 or over is good. Okay. And small amounts owed.
That way your debt ratio.
That way you have the credit available. That shows wisdom to handle emergencies, stuff like that. Small balances show that you're able to pay them off. By the way, there's a conflict here because my advice normally is to pay off your credit card balances every month. However, understand what lenders are looking at. they want you to pay them.
Uh-huh.
So if you say run up a balance of say $2,000 at Christmas, and you have the money to pay that off in January, it might be a good idea to pay it off in 3 or 4 payments, because that way you're showing the lender that you have the ability to reduce debt over a period of time. And after all, that gives them money, and that's what they're most interested in. Now, scientifically, what you want to do is do that on the credit card with the lowest interest rate. Okay. And that way, it still counts the same. They don't pay attention to how much the interest rate is, but you do.
Okay.
So if you want to time a couple out, that does raise your FICO score also. Okay.
And that would be if you're trying to maybe buy a big purchase and you need to get an auto loan or a mortgage, because then that's when you
auto loans are not credit cards.
But for your to raise your FICO score.
To raise your FICO score. Yeah, auto loans are
separate.
Are separate. Credit cards are a science unto themselves. Okay. Yeah. So, okay.
Okay. So speaking of auto loans, so buying a car.
Yes.
When is the best time to buy a car? Because a lot of times you hear, oh, it's good to get the previous year's model. So in the fall, and you see, I mean, the last 3 weeks, I have seen just so many new cars out on the streets.
Yes. And surprisingly, December is the best time to buy a car. If, and this is a big if, you buy a car that you want instead of a car with deep discounts. And also, for the very reason you stated, it's the year end for the dealers. They're trying to make their numbers with the car companies. So they are offering all kinds of incentives to buy at that time. And this is when you see normally your zero interest rate loans coming in and stuff like that. Also, equally good times are the end of January and the end of February. And if the end falls on a Monday or a Tuesday, those are the days to buy, not necessarily the weekend. And that's because if it rained the weekend before, the dealer didn't make his numbers.
Uh-huh.
So on Monday and Tuesday, the sales manager will give away the store to make his numbers.
Okay.
So you can get some really good deals if the last 2 days in the month fall on a Monday or Tuesday, so you can get the sale in there.
And the idea behind the January and February is because people spent money and they're not spending?
There's no money, right?
Because it's all done with the holidays.
The tax refunds haven't come in yet, and car dealers are sweating it that time of year. It's the Christmas gifts run out by January 20th normally. So January, February is really super as a – and you just shop around. Might I suggest that, first of all, in purchasing a car, information is absolutely everything. And the internet, the web is your best friend. And do your research carefully. Go visit dealers, test drive unmercifully. Pick the cars apart, get the brochures, specify your car exactly so you know what color you want. If it's a Japanese car, you may want a VIN number that begins in J so you know it was made in Japan. That's true for the Toyotas. And you want to gather all the information possible, and then you want to try various dealerships over the web by internet purchasing by specification. In other words, you give the list. In most dealerships, those offers to purchase that come in over the web are handled only by the sales manager. So you eliminate a tier of commission already. And you can pretty much specify a price that you want to pay and leave it to them to take it or leave it. And quite often, you can get deals, particularly after the December push. Because December, they're putting so much advertising forth and stuff like that. Unless you catch them right at the end of the year, if it's a rainy December, that's a good time to catch them right at the end of the year, because they will probably be willing to come forth. But you want to make sure you know exactly what you're talking about.
So the internet sales is the way to go once you know exactly what you want.
Exactly. And don't go for substitutions or, oh, yes, we have that, but it doesn't have this. You know, stay with the specification because they can get the car if they want to. What they're trying to do is sell you what they have in stock. But they can get the car if they want to, and if they need the sale, they will.
Okay. And then do you talk about financing at that point, or do you wait?
The financing is interesting. Before you even start shopping for a car, make sure go to your credit union or some other lender that you like of choice. And see how much money you can borrow, how much it's going to cost you, and get a loan pretty much assured for the type of car that you want to buy. Your car is now specified, so the lender has something to bid against. And what you do when you're working with the dealer is the dealer sometimes, not always, but sometimes may be able to beat what the credit union could do for you. And if they can, then certainly you're going to use the dealer financing. But this is a situation like any other loan. You want to shop your loan. This is just, I mean, you know, you'd never go into a store, at least I would never go into a store and pay full price for clothing when you know that in a month it's going to be on sale and it's exactly what you're paying twice the price for now.
Uh-huh.
You know, and you're going to go in later on and get it on sale. I mean, that's what you do. Credit is exactly the same way. So just go and get the credit where you get the best terms for it. And I'll give you another website, bankrate.com, www.bankrate.com. Click on autos when you go there, and you will find that this is a site where you can get comparative rates for everything from cars to mortgages to college financing, credit cards. You can find out what various banks are paying for on CDs and investments. It's kept very up to date, and you can go there and read out the interest rates that you should be paying. And just go there and do your research first again. Now, in buying a car, one thing, my wife's daughter and son-in-law are shopping for a car as we speak. So I've been going through this personally for about the past 3 days with them and doing the research and so on. And so there's a procedure that I can tell you really works. Start, if you're shopping a new or used car, start with Consumer Reports, new car or used car handbook. They publish this every year, and this is the start. Why is this a start? Because you want to see what the history of your car is. Is it all just ideal, or does it have a lot of problems? For instance, they started with a vehicle that they gave to me, and they said, this is our dream car, and then they left for Mexico, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you looked up their dream car, it had all black dots on Consumer Reports.
When they
came back, that was the first thing we showed them, and they said, oh, gee, we don't think we're going to do this. So they went to a completely different car. And they've been researching it. I've been helping them do their research. You start with kellybluebook.com, kbb.com. And then you go to consumerreports.org. And there's two R's in the middle of Consumer Reports. It's Consumer Reports and .org. And they have a marvelous service that they have a new car buying guide that you can buy that gives you the dealer invoice price. Okay, and remember, the dealer gets discounts below that for volume and so on. So if the invoice price is $20,000, that's not actually what the dealer's paying. There may be as much as 15% that he's getting rebated on that for selling certain models and stuff like that. But that's the stated invoice price. So if you're starting to buy at the invoice price, then that's the invoice price. For $14 for one report, in other words, on one particular car, or $39 for 3 months of unlimited cars. So if you're searching for a new car, probably the $39 is a good expenditure. You can get just a comprehensive report. The one they got was about 11 pages long, with every accessory listed out, both at the dealer's invoice price and what they're selling them for, manufacturer's suggested retail price. It was an excellent guide. Now, for used cars, they have the same thing, except it's $12 for one car and $24 for 3 months unlimited.
Okay.
And those are resources that you just can't afford to be without.
No, I think that's important. I have a friend who, they had a high-end car, and they wound up trading it in and getting a new hybrid car because it was coming to the end of their warranty, and it was always in the shop. And they said, you know, when you already spend a lot of money for a car, you don't want to be spending a lot of money throughout the years in repairing and servicing it because this goes out or that goes out. So then they did the research a second time around and decided to get something else that was, okay, we're going to spend this much, but then there's not going to be the maintenance, because that's another factor I don't think people put into when they purchase
a
car.
And I will say that particularly when buying a used car, when buying a new car, you do have the warranty protection usually, which is a manufacturer's warranty. If you have trouble with a car during the manufacturer's warranty period, be sure to sell it before the manufacturer's warranty is over. Because there are some brands of cars that literally start falling apart within the first month of ownership. If you have one of those, be sure that you want to buy another, you know, another car timely before you begin to run into all kinds of debt. But let's say you're buying a used car. This can be a very wise purchase because you avoid that very steep first-year depreciation. It's what's called the taillight depreciation. As your taillight disappears out of the dealer's parking lot, you have then lowered the value of your car by anywhere from 10 to 25%
wow.
just by driving it out the door. So when you are looking for a used car, look for go to Consumer Reports. Look for something with high reliability. The car you want has a low mileage, a single owner, lots of maintenance documentation, and be sure and get the vehicle identification number so you can run a check on Carfax.com to see the history of the car.
Oh.
Okay. Because Carfax.com will tell you if the car has been in major accidents, whether it's been through a flood, all kinds of various things. There's a lot of history. They get their information from insurance reports, DMV accident reports. They have the registration history of the car, not by the names of the owners, but by how many times it's been sold. And you may be very surprised to find out that the single owner car actually had three or four owners. And so you want that kind of information. Now, one of the interesting things we found is we were searching Craigslist, which is another place to find local cars. And is that there were a number on there with cars that had what they called salvage titles on them. And a salvage title is not a car that you want to get into unless you just really understand what you're getting into. Because the salvage titles, basically in order to get a salvage title, an insurance company, the car had damage in excess of 75%. Of the fair market value of the car, and the insurance company refused to repair it. And the owner is allowed to buy those back, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And some will and fix them up. Unless you really know your car and really know what you're looking at, I would avoid cars with salvage titles or junk titles. Well, junk titles are not roadworthy, so they can't be sold or rebuilt. The general problem with these, just generally speaking, is you're going to have some problems in frame alignment. The frame has frequently been tweaked so that it doesn't track quite properly, or the drivetrain may have been damaged in the accident, and the actual failure may not show up for a long time. You can tell right away you can generally tell fairly quickly if the frame has been twisted, because either you can see it when it's going down the road, it doesn't track quite right, or the tires or the brakes will begin to wear unevenly. stuff like that. But if you just avoid the salvage titles, I mean, if you're a fixer-upper and you just love to get your hands greasy, then, and, you know, you love to take, you know, come-alongs and twist your car around, then salvage titles are for you. But if they're not, you know, forget about it. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay. So we have new car options or used car options. Now, we've talked about the financing of it. So this brings us back to the FICO score. It's important to have a high FICO score.
Oh, yes.
to get the financing for your auto.
Oh, yes. And again, back to basics, FICO score is everything, and that's where you get clean. And I have seen a pattern in just what I've seen in my own family here, and that is they set out with a $1 figure that they absolutely were not going to exceed when they were buying the car. And now when they're actually buying the car, I don't quite know what happened to the definition of what we were going to spend, but it seems to be many thousands of dollars higher.
Uh-huh.
And if you're setting out with a figure, try not to do what they're doing. Their car failed. Uh-huh. They kept it until the engine stopped.
Uh-huh.
They need to buy a car today. That is the worst time to buy a car, is when you need to drive a car off the lot today. Because everybody in the car business knows that you have no choice.
Uh-huh.
So they're waiting for you with open arms. And so the best thing to do is phase out your cars unless you get in a major accident or something like that where you have to buy. But phase out the cars. Sometimes you can find that you can go to some rental car companies and you can get a real good deal, particularly if it's an off-season. You can get a real good deal on renting a car for a couple of weeks while you look around and give yourself some time, okay?
You'll put some money out there for that short period of time with the rental car, but it could save you money,
dollars. Oh, thousands of dollars, because you can afford – oh, and the joy of buying a car from a dealer is when they won't do what you want done – you just say, thank you very much, and you walk away. And then you'll notice that you get a phone call the next day, and they talk to their manager, and they suddenly have a good, you know, brand new deal for you. And once you come in and talk to them about it, and I've seen a salesman actually stand in the middle of the driveway and stop my son from leaving a dealership to tell him that he had talked to his manager and he could meet his terms. So, you know, the salespeople are there to sell you cars. And you want to keep it in mind that what a disadvantage you have, because they sell cars all day long and you buy cars maybe once every 3 or 4 years. So they have a definite advantage over you because they know what they're doing and they know how. Just the words to say to make you want to buy. Okay.
Okay. We're talking with Bay Butler. He's the UCD lecturer and enrolled agent, and this is How She Really Does It. And we're talking about finances, and right now we're finishing up on our topic of credit. So mortgages. We're seeing a lot of stuff in the papers right now about certain different kinds of mortgages and the housing market and refinancing. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I was listening to a personal finance show where there was a banking representative from Wells Fargo yesterday on the radio. And it was interesting that she was pointing out that probably it may not be too good an idea to gamble on interest rates being particularly lower than they are now. And again, this is where bankrate.com comes in. And she even suggested going to bankrate.com and checking out the things. Because if you are going to refinance, now is the time to refinance into a 30-year fixed mortgage period. And then thoroughly expect to see the value of your house probably drop below what you just financed it for. And that's why to do it now, because if you're in a mortgage that is a trap mortgage, like a some of the hybrid mortgages are, or the
interest only for or the, 5 years.
Yeah, interest only, or the there's a name for them, the arms, the option arms, or pick a payment adjustable rate mortgages, which have negative amortization. So if you what in those you have picked to pay a certain payment all year long, well, but the interest rate can vary every month.
Uh-huh.
So if the interest rate keeps going up, what they do is take the difference between what you're paying and what the actual interest is, and they tack it on top of the principal amount of the loan. So your loan, instead of going down, goes up.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Yes, these are option arms, and they are the big trap of today. 50 to 60% of the loans in California recently have been in hybrids or option arms in the last 18 months. So a lot of people are headed for a real rocky coast on these. And if you're in one of those, before the value of your house drops too much, it would be a good idea to be able to try and get it refinanced on a fixed 30-year now. Because when the caps pop or lift on that ARM, on the adjustable rate mortgage, you stand a good chance of heading for some serious trouble. And when I say serious, what most people don't realize is if they have refinanced their mortgage and they then default and they have no mortgage insurance, which seems to be the style now that you have the 80-10-10 loans and other specialty products like that, that an 80-10-10 loan is where you've been loaned, you put 10% down.
People think that's a smart thing to do it that way, so they don't pay the PMI.
So they don't, but if you don't have the mortgage insurance and the value of your house falls below, and this is on a refinance, and the value of the house falls below the amount of the loan, and you default or there's a short sale, you are issued what's called a 1099-C, which is a cancellation of debt. That's taxable income. So if one of those goes south on you, $100,000, you end up owing tax on $100,000 plus having lost your house and having no money.
Wow.
Now,
and it's hard to get bankruptcy.
And you can't. Oh yeah, bankruptcy is a forget about it.
It's a downward spiral quickly.
Yeah. Now, what you want to do is, if you are in that situation, there's an Internal Revenue Service Code Section 108A, which is the insolvency exception to that. And if you have a modest income, you may qualify for the insolvency exception, but it's a push. Let's put it this way, about one out of three people in my practice that have situations like this qualify for the insolvency exception. And if you, a lot of preparers are unaware of it, and so you want to make sure that you, because they'll just take the 1099-C and put it down as income on line 21. And you want to avoid that if you can. And the code section 108A is the way around that. Okay. So, but you have to qualify for it.
So now if you have an adjustable or some of these different mortgages, it's now's the time to get into a fixed mortgage.
I would say that now is the time to get into a fixed mortgage, 30-year fixed mortgage, if you can. And if it's gone south, in other words, for instance, if you live in Lincoln, in the new homes over there, the major builders, this article in the Sacramento Bee 2 days ago, I believe on the front page, if I'm not mistaken, and they basically said, if you want to buy a house, go buy it from a builder in Lincoln, Marysville, or Sutter, because they're selling at just huge discounts. And they were saying something like $225,000 off the original asking price. That's a huge discount. Well, now you got to remember, if you were one of those poor people who right at the end of that cycle paid $225,000 more for a house and now you want to try and sell it, people can drive by your house, buy a brand new home with the warranties on it and everything else for $225,000 less than you're trying to sell yours for. I mean, you know, wow. This is, if you're caught in a situation, you're just trapped like that. Get out your mortgage, go to your lender, have them explain exactly to you what the likelihood is happening and see if you can handle it. Okay. Or make, if you can't finance out of it and you can't sell it, then you've got to, you know, face the fact that you're going to have some serious difficulties coming up. Planning is everything in a situation like that. Quite often you can get help from family. You can rent out part of your home, take in students, rent rooms, stuff like that. Is that fun? Is that what you want to do with this great big beautiful home with the tile floors and the nice upstairs and everything like that? And the answer is no, not, it's not what you want to do. But probably if you're going to get through it, you're going to need a secondary income to help you through that. Now, if you're trapped in a house, get out quick. Because don't hold a home because it's your home. Get out from under it quickly, as fast as you can, and on the best terms that you can. Because holding it, the end of holding a home that you can't afford is bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just no choice. And it can, it, we're not talking about FICO score here. We're talking about just living for the rest of your life. It can really wreck 10 years of your life afterwards. So work hard at getting your situation resolved, as they say. Isn't that a nice one? Get your situation resolved, right? In other words, bail if you can as quickly as you can, right?
Then making a bigger mess.
And then making a bigger mess, yeah. And it's really, really sad. So, but that's the nature of the way we live right now.
Now, for right now, okay, so we have those homes that you had mentioned, in particular, like Lincoln. Is this a good time to start buying a house, or should people just wait still? Because sometimes I've heard that, you know, if you can rent that house for cheaper than you can buy it, it may not be the time.
Well, now you bring up a point which is a lot of people are making now. A lot of people are buying house on an interest-only loan. And they never do expect it to pay it off. The generation that I come from wants a house free and clear. The generation that is coming up now says, well, now, you know, it's, you know, why not just pay interest only? And, you know, it's somebody else's money. I'm just using it. And so I'm just renting the money. And that's okay. But my point to that is, why would you pay rent to a bank and accept all the liabilities of home ownership, which is repairs, maintenance, all the things that went wrong in construction on the house, the landscaping, all that kind of thing, when you could rent from somebody else for probably less than you're paying and probably next door at the moment.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Because there's a lot of people trying to rent empty houses right now. And I mean, I have a woman who lives up in Lincoln now, and she's paying $1,200 a month, which includes a membership in the recreation club and stuff like that.
Wow.
For a 3-bedroom, 1,600-square-foot house. And I'm going, whoa, this is, you know, maybe I'll just move and rent my house, right? Because, I mean, you know, it's a palatial place. It's really wonderful. And so a lot of times you want to look at saying, well, should I rent right now? And the answer is it may be cheaper for a considerable period of time. However, you want to be sure that during that time you're taking the difference between what you're paying in rent and what you would be paying for a house, and investing that so that you build your wealth, okay? Because that's what a home is, is the biggest number one wealth-building device in the United States is in the single-family dwelling.
Well, and I think what's happened with the younger generations is they've seen, especially in California, where you know, families might buy a house for $100,000, you know, 30 years ago. And all of a sudden, especially in the Bay Area, where the parents were able to sell it for $900. So they think, oh, well, my house is going to appreciate at this rate. And this is why I don't, you know, I'm going to. And I think that's what happened to a lot of people in the last 5 or 6 years. Well, I'm just going to make money on my house. So, and instead of just realizing, okay, we want to pay it and own it, that way we can have choices, but also not to put us in situations where if the market takes a nosedive or if interest rates go up, that they aren't losing their house. I think there was some gambling that was going on because of what they've seen with the older
generation.
And
if they don't have to transfer jobs, and if they don't have to, you know, all the list of things, if they don't become disabled, if they don't get sick, if all the other things.
Divorced,
yeah, which is complicated, okay, yeah. And all that kind of stuff. Now, you know, you bring up a point on the is property going to continue to appreciate? And the answer is if you live in a built-out area like San Francisco, Chicago, New York City, the answer is – and actually, interestingly enough, Berkeley has been shown this kind of resilience also. It will dip somewhat during times like these, but because there's no more space – and people do want to live there, then the prices are – there's going to be continued pressure from a supply-demand status. But if you live in the Sacramento area, there's a lot of room.
There's a lot of room and a lot of infill.
A lot of infill. Okay.
Well, Bay, I'd like to thank you for coming on our show, How She Really Does It. We really had good information for us. And thanks for listening to How She Really Does It with Corinne.